Hello and welcome to the Mercenary Star Podcast. We are on episode 2, and I am super excited to have a very special guest with us today. I have, as I try to do two things at once, Derek. Derek from the On the Origin of Battlemech podcast. Derek, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Seth. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, as long as my computer continues to work. It's a challenge, apparently. It's fun times. But thank you for being here. Thank you for agreeing to come on and do an episode with me. Today is, again, like I said, episode 2 of the Mercenary Star podcast. We are covering all of the mercenary units that are being highlighted in the upcoming Kickstarter from Catalyst Game Labs for Battletech. So, again, thank you for joining us. Today we're going to be covering the Iridani Light Horse. They are a fun unit to cover. But before we get into that, Derek, first, why do you like the Iridani Light Horse?
So, again, my initial entry, which I'm sure you remember because you were there at Wolfnet with me when I began my journey into Battletech, the Iridani Light Horse being associated with the Federated Suns, which is my favorite Inner Sphere faction.
Of course.
Saw me basically associate myself, and then my journey through the fiction when I started reading Twilight of the Clans, which we'll talk about a little bit later, they're heavily associated in and play a big role in it. On top of that, the fact that they're cavalry, and I spent 3 years in a United States Army cavalry regiment in Germany, so there's a little bit of that, of, hey, I can associate with these guys pretty well based on, you know, my experience, my actual lived experience. So, that, and they have a neat color scheme and a really awesome story, so.
They do. Their story is probably, like, their history is probably the longest across the timeline of the Battletech universe, which is awesome. So obviously you mentioned we kind of met through the Wolfnet radio podcast. Awesome guys, love them. Fantastic community. They love the Wolf's Dragoons, which we'll cover in another episode. And I've already been told that I have to have the Kroll brothers on for that. So, I'm excited about it. Those guys are fantastic. Besides that, what was it that brought you into Battletech?
So what brought me into Battletech? So, honestly, at this point, about 20 years ago, my cousin and I, in the basement, had a old computer with MechWarrior 4 on it.
Well, awesome.
Old by our standards. It was fairly modern by those standards.
It was.
but we had MechWarrior 4 Mercenaries. I remember he and I playing through that game, I think, multiple times, as well as MechWarrior 3, Ghost Bear's Lament. Like, those games, mm-hmm. I remember them deeply. And then, of course, as I got older, playing Mech Assault 1 and 2. On the Xbox in the mid-2000s, 2005, 2008-ish.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, someone's probably...
Somewhere around there.
Right in the comments and tell me how I'm wrong, but whatever.
It's okay.
So it was that. I also did see it at my local gaming store. Never really got into actually playing the tabletop. Various reasons, but I remember seeing it in store, looking at the books, thought it was really cool. Then about... I think it was about 5-6 years ago, about 2011 or 2017, I should say. Sorry, 6 more years forward. I actually read The Blood of Kerensky for the first time, because I picked it up on a whim and I was like, oh, that looks cool. Like, why not just read it?
Yeah.
And then, kind of just started to fall into a hole with Battletech, especially after the HBS game dropped and started.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, all right, well, this is cool. This is fun. Like, I'm enjoying this. And then I heard about the Kickstarter, And actually, one of the big key things that got me into actually playing tabletop was the Krulls and the Wolfnet podcast. I started listening to them while I was living in Virginia as a lieutenant stationed at Fort Lee. And then after that, when I went to Korea, I actually played my first few games of at least Alpha Strike Battletech. I actually helped get a community started in Seoul, South Korea. They're
That's
still
awesome.
playing today.
That's fantastic.
And then now here I am in Oklahoma with you, actually, not too far
I
away.
know, I know. You've only
And
just arrived. We have not
oh,
met up yet. Totally my
I
fault.
know. We're only an hour and a half away from each other.
I know, I know.
Anyway,
We're gonna connect and
recently.
then we'll post it on the Mercenary Star podcast socials. Probably the YouTube pod socials too. It'll just be a big to do.
It'll be a big to do.
Yeah.
But then getting here, actually got to play my first three games of Classic. The third one was actually today.
That's
So
awesome.
kind of getting in that and really enjoying the Oklahoma Battletech community. They're a bunch of great
It's a
people. So
great community. Yeah.
it
It's a lot bigger than you would think too for I don't
Oh
know.
yeah.
People think of Oklahoma and they tend to dismiss it for everything, really. Except for the Oklahoma City Thunder. People now know that they're, a decent basketball team most years. But before that, literally people thought, we all had like chickens and horses in our yard or something. I don't know,
I mean,
that's a quote from
I'm
Charles
just as
Barkley,
guilty.
so
Oh, I'm just as guilty of that
it's
'cause
okay. It's okay.
came down
But
here for the
now
first time this summer, so I was like
you
expecting
can prove
flat.
otherwise, right? It is flat.
I
We're
can.
part of the Great Plains, but
Well,
yeah.
hey, I live in the Wichita Mountains. I'll just have you know.
That's
We have
true.
mountains here in Oklahoma. They're
Mountains.
giant hills, but they're
Yeah.
anyway.
No, awesome, awesome. I'm excited to have you here, Derek, because again, I'm excited to have you in Oklahoma after having known you for like a couple years in the Wolfnet community. And we are gonna get connected, and you're gonna teach me Alpha Strike because I haven't done that. I've only played Classic.
Good.
But it's gonna be fun. Well, moving on, let's get into our mercenary unit for today, which is the Eridani Light Horse. They were formed in the BattleTech timeline in the year 2702. And if you are a deep diver into the lore, you know that this is during the Star League. If you don't know, this is during the Star League. This is before, this predates the where the BattleTech timeline kind of picked up with the games. And so they were actually formed as a Star League Defense Force unit known as the 3rd Regimental Combat Team. They were not called the Eridani Light Horse until later, which we'll talk about that in a minute when we get to the unit summary. And they are still around in the current timeline in the 3151 Ilclan era. And so we'll kind of see where they're at. They were founded, and I say they were founded by Ezra Bradley. He was not the first commander, but he was the commander who took them from being a Star League Defense Force unit to being a mercenary unit. So that's why I'm naming him as the founder. I think he's the first named commander anyway, because their first one was.
I
We'll talk about that.
believe so. At least from what I was able to find, they don't
Yeah.
really mention anybody before him.
Yeah.
He's also the first one to really appear in the fiction, in the
Yes.
Eridani Light Horse, like Chronicles, or I think it's called No Greater Honor is the actual
Yes,
name
which is a
of the
recent
actual
book, and I just finished reading it. I wanted to read that before we did this episode because I wanted to get the overall sense, and fortunate for me, Catalyst Game Labs put out literally their entire story in one novel. Not there's a few other things in their history, but it's a fantastic overview, and it'll be listed with the books in the fiction. So
it's a
it
great series of
is
stories.
it's fantastic. It's an anthology, so fun fact, the Eridani Light Horse were one of the original six mercenary units in the 1984 Battle Droids box set. They were given a six-sentence paragraph, and that's it. All of them, I think, were given about that much. But there were 6 mercenary units listed. There was no fiction about them. There was a brief description. And I don't even think there were logos until the second edition. But there was units kind of for each great house. And the Eridani Light Horse, like you said, were yellow and black to match the Federated Suns. One of the ones we'll do later, Hansen's Rough Riders, were blue to go with the Lyran Commonwealth. The Wolf's Dragoons were red and black to go with the Draconis Combine. So there was kind of a theme going on. I think McCarran's Cavalry was green because of Capellans. And then there wasn't a purple one for...
I think there was 21st Centauri Lancers.
Not, well, I don't think that they listed them even attached to the Free Worlds League in that one. I don't have the copy of that, so I don't know. Yeah. But from what I've read, they kind of didn't give them to them, but they were there.
It was the Succession Wars game. They were the mercenary unit.
Yes.
Board game, because each of them had the same units fall under them, but yeah, right. 21st Centauri Lancers fell under Free Worlds League.
But in the original box, they didn't have one technically associated with them for some reason. I don't know. At least that's what I read. So, but hey, let's do this. We're going to go, if you're watching the video, we're going to go into a little bit of the presentation. I kind of already skipped ahead because I'm trying to, get it. But, again, there's some info there, that we just talked about. They didn't get their name, the Eridani Light Horse, in the BattleTech lore until the year 2749, when we'll talk about it in the summary, but basically they were still part of the Star League army at that point. And somebody, a journalist, compared them to Eridani horses, and that's where they got the name. So we'll touch on that a little bit in a minute. Also, in 2784, which was Exodus Day for the Star League Defense Force Army, they chose to stay and become a mercenary unit, which is when they were founded by Ezra Bradley. So, let's see. They first appeared in fiction, like in the novels, if I'm not mistaken, in 1989 in Wolves on the Border. And that was when they defeated the Wolf's Dragoons, which is pretty awesome because not many units can claim that. I mean, the Wolf's Dragoons basically had them, and then the Light Horse got reinforcements.
Well, that and they counterattacked, and the fact that the Dragoons actually respected the Light Horse. Which, if you read the book, it actually basically...
Yes.
The best way I can describe it is they were like, holy crap, it's the Light Horse. And
yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, especially because, obviously, in 1989, we didn't know this as readers. But the Wolf Dragoons were from Clan Wolf. So they knew who the Eridani Light Horse were and had a respect for them as a storied unit from the Star League days. So... all comes back around. I like that though. Yeah, so yeah.
With the Star League RCT.
Yes. And they were like, oh my gosh, you know, so, and that was probably the only unit that would have given them pause really. But no, that's, yeah, it was cool. So that was the first book that they appeared in. I don't have a slide for the list of books to show on screen, but I will have it in the show notes on YouTube and on the podcast. So be looking for that. I'll go ahead and read them though. Wolves on the Border was the first by Robert N. Charette, if that's how you say his name, in 1989. Then Wolf Pack, another good Wolf's Dragoons book, in 1992. And then Sword and Fire with a different author. Thomas Gressman, at this point, in 1998, put out Sword and Fire, which was about the Eridani Light Horse, and then also Shadows of War, both in 1998. That they were actually August and September of that year. Yep.
They were Twilight of Clans. They were the
yes.
I think they're the last two before Prince of Havoc. So,
like, I don't remember the order, but yeah, I think they were. And that was, yep. Oh man, like I was in, like I got into BattleTech in 1990. I'm old, I know, but I was, you know, the day that the BattleTech book released for the month, because they released one every month. But the day that they released it, I was there to pick it up, and man, going through the Twilight of the Clans, series was phenomenal. It was really cool. 'Cause like we basically just got a new book every month to continue this amazing story. So,
I experienced it 22 years after you.
Well, you know, that's okay. That's okay. You got to experience it. You didn't also have to wait.
Yeah, that's true. I had it all lined up in my Kindle, so I just went one. To
what
the
is there?
To the
and you had them digitally, so there's that too.
Yep.
Then there was Dagger Point, again, Thomas Cressman, and that came out in 2000. Then. We actually moved to the current era under Catalyst Game Labs, and we got Endless War, which was a MechWarrior 5 Origins series story, and it was the third installment by Randall Bills, and that came out in 2019. And then No Greater Honor, which is the anthology we were talking about, which is literally the entire Light Horse story from being in the Star League army all the way up to 3151, going into Ilclan. So really cool. Highly, highly recommend it if you want to consider this unit at all. And then as part of the Kickstarter, we got a novella that I haven't finished yet called Innocent and Defenseless by Jason Hansa. And it just came out this year in 2023 as part of the, monthly kind of mercenary Kickstarter releases they're doing, where they release two factions, and so it involves the Eridani Light Horse and Star League and Eridani Light Horse, and it is actually a Star League story, so
it's,
but it's cool.
It's set well before they go on the Exodus. I think yes. It's set, like, 10 or 15 years before the Ameris Civil War. I'm just like you. I'm still, it's
yeah.
Like half,
and part of,
so.
Yeah. And part of what I really love about this project and this podcast is that I'm really enjoying diving into the lore of each of these mercenary units. And I mean, like, I love the Grey Death Legion. I've always loved them. I didn't really know that much about Eridani Light Horse except what was in Twilight of the Clans and some of the other novels. And that was it. Like, I hadn't read anything in source books. I hadn't, you know, until this No Greater Honor came out, I hadn't read Endless War. I still haven't read that. I'm going to have to read it. But, you know, I'd read all the other books, but that was it. That was all the extent of my knowledge for Eridani. And so loved getting to learn the history of them. You know, also too, because they've been around forever, I just love the old artwork. You can't see it, but right now I'm showing the, like the 80s, almost looks like pencil drawings, but they're colored in of like the uniforms, right? So it's like the tech, like the Aztec, the troopers, the tanker, the mech warrior. They're fantastic. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, they have some really nice artwork from the older books.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that really kind of is unfortunate, and luckily we're getting to see more, like you said, more fiction as of recently, is because of the whole legal issues that revolved around the Eridani Light Horse.
Yeah.
I think, not exactly sure who it was, basically claimed, I own that in the IP. There's a big lawsuit.
Yeah, and I decided not to look into that at all. So
yeah,
for this.
I don't know enough about it. I just know it happened. So that's kind of why they basically, the last time they get mentioned is in like 2000, and then a little bit in the Jihad, and then it just goes quiet.
Yeah,
and I think because all of that basically settled, they've moved to the forefront again. Like, I mean, the cover essentially for the new
the Kickstarter.
Box.
Yeah.
The Kickstarter is Iridani Light.
And we're gonna see that right now, excellent, actually, as we go into the unit summary. And so we're gonna tag team this. I'm gonna start us off just kind of giving you a brief synopsis of the Iridani Light Horse. And hopefully this is enough of a hook that you'll go find this. A lot of this came from that novel we talked about, that anthology of the history. But there's a little bit of it that comes from other areas too. So, again, Iridani Light Horse, longest running mercenary command within the Inner Sphere that we have at the moment, dating back to being part of the Star League Defense Force, regular army. They were formed as the in 2702 as the 3rd Regimental Combat Team, and they actually had 4 regiments. They had 2 heavy regiments and then 2 light horse, or the, you know, kind of recon cavalry regiments. And then so that, you know, they were pretty big back then.
Had the 71st and I think 151st light horse regiments, which would be the scout regiments, and then the 19th, 21st strikers, which would be your like assaults and heavy force.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's a 1-2 punch of, hey, the scouts find you and the striker regiments
come
and finish you off.
Yeah.
They were pretty well equipped, which most people don't seem to realize because they hear the name light horse. Like, no, they're not a light regiment.
Well, and they weren't
a light force.
And as a unit, as an entire RCT, they were considered a recon unit, or a response unit, I guess, would be kind of the better
rapid response force, because they're not, they're not your standard, battle mech division.
Right. Yeah, exactly. They weren't a battle mech division because they were combined arms. They had lots of tanks, infantry, stuff like that. So, go ahead and grab that second one there.
Move ahead from there.
Yeah.
As Seth mentioned earlier, in 2749, the Light Horse would gain its nickname, the Iridani Light Horse. So the Prince of Rosselhag, a Draconis Combine noble, basically got upset with the 3rd RCT due to some political ongoings and the fact that they were garrisoned in his territory. So he hired assassins to kill the third's commander. Obviously, that did not go over very well with the soldiers of the 3rd RCT. So the unit responded with an occupation of all the worlds in the Rosselhag district. The prince then sent troops to the city of Iridani, where the 3rd RCT basically slaughtered them like cows, essentially, or lambs to the slaughter. A journalist watching and seeing the action described them as spirited Iridani stallions chasing after fat Luthien cows, because how they basically humiliated.
Totally demoralizing, yeah.
Yeah, they basically crushed the DCMS and made it look easy. So the name stuck, and that's when they became known as the Iridani Light Horse and kind of adopted that as their moniker and then eventually their logo.
Yeah. And that's fantastic. I love that. And they were still part of the SLDF at the time. Kind of moving forward a little bit, we get Colonel Ezra Bradley, who leads the Light Horse after that. And he leads with distinction during the hegemony campaign to overthrow Amaris the Usurper. And was even friends with Alexander Kerensky, to whom he directly reported. However, whenever Kerensky decided to take the surviving SLDF into self-imposed exile, he knew that without House Cameron to unify the Star League, that the great houses were going to descend into war, basically. And so, knowing that, he basically secretly let everyone in the SLDF decide if they wanted to volunteer to go into exile, basically. And even the Iridani Light Horse, all top to bottom, were given the choice. And I think there was about 2 lances of them that actually went with, or maybe 2 companies that went with the SLDF into Exodus. But the rest all stayed. They all stayed because they felt that they needed to be there to defend the people of the Inner Sphere. And so they became mercenaries. And but even through that represented the ideals of the Star League. Since then, one of the cool tidbits that I liked from that was that they always set up two flagpoles on, you know, every world that they were on, wherever they had a base, they would set up two flagpoles. One would be their flag at half mast, and then the other one would be empty, because they would leave it empty in order to pay respect to the fallen Star League. So basically, there was an empty flagpole, and it was so important to them, this tradition, that it was actually a clause in their contract that they had to be allowed to do this. So it's pretty cool, you know, keeping a tradition alive like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big thing with them, is a lot of what they do is tradition based.
Oh, absolutely.
Because of their long history. I mean, they've been essentially a unit for over 300 plus years. So they're one of the most longest continuous like units in the Inner Sphere.
Yeah. Yeah. And they, you know, they faced lots of times of trials, but they never were non-existent, as we'll find out here.
We will find out.
Go ahead and take the next two there.
Okay. So going forward, I'll talk about a couple of things here. So the Iridani Light Horse did fight for all five great houses. They had some rough times with the Draconis Combine when the Centauri's massacre occurred during the First Succession War. Don't remember the date exactly on the top of my head, but I think it's like 2798 or 99.
Yes, I think you're hit the nail on the head there, actually.
Oh, well, wow.
Good job.
I remember my Battletech dates better than some of my family's birthdays.
Right?
That's probably pretty bad at this point. But anyway, so when that happens and news spreads across the Inner Sphere, that word gets to the Iridani Light Horse. Again, as Seth said, they were very, you know, traditions of the Star League and the way of the Star League. So they had a very high moral compass in their soldiers. So they basically told the Draconis Combine, we're out. We're not going to be a part of this. We want nothing to do with this. Like, mm-hmm. that is not what we want to be associated with. So when they attempt,
they even had an escape clause in their contract for such a thing. So,
yep.
It was a legal extraction.
It was completely legal. So they invoked that and they began leaving. Well, the problem is as they began their evacuation, one of the last things to leave was the dependents of the regiments. So what ended up happening is a Draconis Combine noble essentially took them all hostage and demanded, you know, well, he actually had to fight it out with one of the battalions of the Light Horse, who basically died to the man trying to defend the dependents of the regiment or of the RCT. So when this happens, the RCT turns around as their burning out system turns around, comes back, and basically does a giant planetary drop assault and essentially, the best way to put it is massacres the DCMS soldiers.
Yeah.
Any Caretan, basically official government, it doesn't really matter, police officer, civil servant, they just execute all of them because they're trying.
Yeah, they eliminate, in the book, they say basically they were going to leave no form of government whatsoever. They left civilians alone, but they basically, yeah, they no government buildings down to the, you know, police stations and everything. Like, just there will be no government associated with this.
And
so yeah, it was crazy.
The DCMS reinforcements sent in to deal with them once they learn of what happened to the dependents, they kind of just sit there and are like, nope, we want nothing to do with this. We're going to just sit here and wait till you guys are gone and we'll go in and restore order.
Yeah, so it was
and then essentially the Light Horse take off, and I think they head off to the Lyran Commonwealth.
They did.
They served there for a few years. They run into some troubles there. Parts of the unit break off to become their own thing.
Almost got company stored.
Almost got.
If you know what that means, you know what that means. Basically, the Lyrans tried to fold them into the the regular army, and they didn't like that.
So. And then on top of that, Liren, towards the basically 29, I think it's like 29 30, 29 90s, the Lirens do some things with the Light Horse where they kind of send them on essentially suicide missions to grind mm-hmm. them down, to get their hand, basically to be able to bring them into the Elcaf. Well, the Light Horse doesn't much care for that, and at the same time, that's when a not Hondstavian, his brother. Wow, I'm blanking. I should know this. I'm a huge Davian fan, and I'm blanking on one of my first princes. But his brother basically hires them to be his, you know, primary opposition training force in the mm-hmm. AFFS. They get picked up, and then they go there, and then end up, like you said, becoming basically the premier mercenary unit of the Federated Sons, striking the fear of God into the Wolf's Dragoons during the events of Wolves on the Border, and then also serving with distinction during the Fourth Succession War. They would remain there and actually serve a lot of the regimental officers would actually serve as instructors at the NAIS Military Academy. And it's during this time that they more or less become part of the AFFS. They do get company stored to a very high degree.
Kind of,
they're still
yeah.
kind of independent, but like...
They're not officially, but yeah.
Yeah, it's mainly due to the fact of during the Fourth Succession War, they actually do almost lose an entire regiment. Mm-hmm. And Hondstavian's like, I'll rebuild that regiment, but here's all the costs associated with it. And
yeah.
it kind of puts them into a weird position where they're a semi-independent, like essentially RCT in the Federated Sons military. Then comes the clans, and they kind of...
Then comes the clans.
...during that time, yeah. They would fight in 3052, actually taking heavy losses against the clans. Mm-hmm. But honestly, it was interesting.
On Sudeten, actually.
Yep, on Sudeten. And then what's interesting is during that time, they actually take essentially a year of mourning after they learn who the clans are. Because they're like, wait, these guys are the SLDF. Like, they're us. They're what we're descended from. But kind of seeing them, they're also like, these people have betrayed the ideals of the Star League. So the Light Horse don't take it kindly.
No, not at all. They definitely feel betrayed by it.
Yep. They feel some type of way is the best way to describe it.
Mm-hmm, But yeah, absolutely. And then, like you said, they rejoin the battle, and then they again become one of the top mercenary units facing the clans from about 3055 on in different areas. Eventually, in 3058, so Battle of Tukiad happened, the clans are stopped. 3058, Ariana Winston is the commander of the Light Horse and is invited to a conference of the leaders of the Inner Sphere. And when she gets there, she's basically invited to be the first unit in a reformed Star League Defense Force as the leaders of the Inner Sphere reform the Star League at the Witting Conference. And so they become part of the Star League Defense Force once again. And then they head off into, with the forming of the Star League, they actually head off on Task Force Serpent. This is all in the Twilight of Clans books too, but they head off on a long journey to the clan homeworlds to meet the invaders on their home turf. They take part in the annihilation of Clan Smoke Jaguar, and then fight in the Refusal War to stop any further invasion of the Inner Sphere by the clans. And so they finally kind of get their retribution on the descendants of the Star League that they felt betrayed by, and prove their mettle.
Very high cost.
It was very high. It was about 60% casualties.
And then losing General Winston as well during the campaign. I think if I remember right.
She was still there.
No, she was killed. She's killed right as the reinforcements arrive from the Inner Sphere.
It was Campbell. Was it Campbell? No. Who was it that got absorbed by the Goliath Scorpions then?
It was, 'cause I thought it was Kendrell, Winston. Sarah Kendrell. It was one of the regimental commanders. Because I think she commanded the 71st Light Horse.
Hold on. I literally just read this within the last 2 days, so I'm like, I don't feel like that's the right name. That's okay. Thankfully, we have things that we can look. I'm just going to find this.
Yeah, not trying to throw you.
No. I just want to make sure, like, we have a duty to report accurately.
Of course. General Winston was killed during the final battles on Huntress. Basically, just as reinforcements arrive, she's killed. Because that's one of my favorite scenes in The Twilight of the Clans, is basically she's killed, and then her second-in-command, Colonel Amos, or I think it's him or one of the other colonels of the regiment, or
yeah,
basically gets a message from the Comstar commander of the fleet saying that the inbound dropships and warships are from Task Force Bulldog and are coming here under Prince Victor Steiner Davian.
Sandra Barclay. That's who it is.
Barclay. That's who it is.
So yeah. And it wasn't Ariana Winston. You're right. I just knew it wasn't the other name you said didn't quite sound fresh. Yeah. So Sandra Barclay was the one who was the commander. And basically she stayed. So like you said, Operation Bulldog, who was basically fighting the Smoke Jaguars out of the Inner Sphere, pushing them out of the Inner Sphere back to the homeworlds, while Task Force Serpent took the long road and got there early. Victor Steiner Davian and Operation Bulldog arrived. They fought the refusal war with all the homeworld clans, all 18 remaining.
Trial of Refusal.
Refusal, yeah.
Or, as they call it, the Great Refusal.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he ends up, the Light Horse does most of the work with along
they do
with
a lot.
The rest of the Task Force. But, he gets the glory of finishing off the last
battle. Absolutely, absolutely.
But they play a big role in that. And then they actually act as the garrison on Huntress.
They do. Not all of them, though. Some of them do return back to the Inner Sphere to rebuild. But Sandra Barclay and part of, I think it's the 71st.
Yep, the 71st actually stays behind, but they're also, they do rotations of the different regiments going out there to take over.
However, while they're there, they don't last very long on Huntress, because all the clans are pretty ticked off and they start coming for them in Trials of Possession, for mechs, for warriors. I really actually enjoyed the story in No Greater Honor. Is that what it is? No. Yeah. I really enjoyed the story of Goliath Scorpions actually kind of absorbing them through friendship.
Well, the Scorpions kind of realize, hey, these guys need a home, and they're exhausted and tired.
Yeah, yeah.
They're technically relics, so we're going to take them.
Exactly, because the Goliath Scorpions are the collectors. I do have a new appreciation for them now, knowing... And I knew that that had happened, but it was just kind of a blurb. I didn't really know anything about it. So this story, it gave it some depth, and I liked it. I liked the story, so...
That was the nice thing with No Greater Honor, is a lot of this stuff that just shows up like as a paragraph in a story.
Yes. Some
understanding too. But
absolutely.
So moving forward then.
Yeah.
With those that return home to the Inner Sphere. So the bulk of the ELH does return home. They leave a garrison regiment to hold Huntress and to kind of act as the Star League's honor guard out in the clan war, clan space. But those that return, they actually, with the gracious gift from Theodore Corita, actually gain the old castle Brian on Dedron or Dedron,
Darion? I don't know.
Darion.
Yeah.
Because and the DCMS even refurbishes it to let them use it as a
Yeah,
base,
that's
because
really cool.
it essentially becomes a Star League base because he's Theodore at the time is the first lord of the Star League.
Yes.
So he refurbishes that, lets them use it as a base, and also due to their fame and glory from essentially, defeating Smoke Jaguar because they led the charge. They are basically given their choice of recruits from across the Inner Sphere, choice equipment, everything. Like they're in a really good spot to the fact that they actually not only rebuild the three regiments that they had at the time, but they also rebuilt the 19th Striker, which had been lost in the Succession Wars. So
Yeah.
they're back up to essentially full strength. It was during this time that they would also serve as peacekeepers for the Star League, taking
Yes.
part in the St. Ives Capella
Capellan.
conflict. Again, they're kind of forced into fighting it.
Yeah.
They're trying to avoid it, but again, trying to be peacekeepers, but they find themselves like, hey, we got to take a side. So they do. That's covered in the novel Daggerpoint.
Yeah.
Pretty fun novel.
Great book, yeah.
But that's kind of their timeline during what it would amount to be the FedCom Civil War era up into the early Jihad. And then of course Jihad hits, and I'll let you take that fun
Oh, thank you so much. it's
part.
all of our favorite time in the BattleTech universe, but long story short, Word of Blake attacks Darion, basically, and drop some tactical nukes on the Castle Bryan and the Light Horse, and 90% of them were in Darion, in the Castle Bryan. They were decimated from this. The other units that were not on world were I think in would then later be on Hesperus too.
So no. So you have Sandra Barclay's unit that's out in, that we
Yeah,
just
Sandra
talked about
Barclay
mid.
is out in, and this is all happening kind of in the 3060s, basically.
Yeah, this is happening in the early Jihad era, so like 3068-ish.
Yep.
So Barclay's out there, she does get absorbed because they'd actually just rotated out to the clans and then lost communication because the Jihad breaks out.
Yeah.
Unit that was supposed to actually relieve them and come get them and bring them back. I forget where they are, but they're on the edge of like Combine space at a Comstar base essentially. So
Yes.
and
Yeah.
Jihad breaks out, the
And
Word of
then,
Blake shows up and drops nuclear bombs on them, and
yeah.
then two of the other regiments are on Dedron where they also get nuked. So there's only a few dozen survivors across,
Yeah.
they're not much left, but there are survivors of the regiment
Yes.
that kind of make it and go on to form essentially splinters because
Yeah,
they don't know each other kind of exists.
they splinter into six or seven, maybe, different
It's like six or
groups.
seven different commands, yeah.
Yes, and they're not unified anymore. They're operating independently. They all claim to be the Eridani Light Horse. And they're kind of all banking on that name. However, in like I said, one of the two major ones was on Hesperus 2 when Malvina Hazen and the Jade Falcons, along with their allies, the Hell's Horses, drop on Hesperus 2, and they essentially wipe out the Eridani Light Horse to a man, barring just a couple of them, I think. And they are able
They did
to,
everyone. They
yeah,
kill everyone.
yeah. They're anti-mercenary doctrine. They wipe him out, and so that of the two major ones that have a major claim to, being the truest descendants of the star of the Eridani Light Horse. That one's wiped out. The other one is the one that's commanded by Colonel Amelia Donovan, who is leader of the 11th Recon Battalion, who ends up being approached by a representative of Prince Julian Davian of the Federated Sons, kind of coming full circle. And whenever they became part of the Star League Defense Force and they left on Task Force Serpent, they actually had guaranteed monies that they then diversified across the Fed Sons, the Lyran Commonwealth, and Comstar. But when they returned, and after they were kind of all, you know, after the jihad and communications broken down and Gray Monday, basically no one would give them their money so they could reform, which is another reason why all these splinter groups happened, because people were just stranded where they were and had to start taking work, basically.
Yep. One of the biggest reasons was because they couldn't confirm what happened to the 71st.
They couldn't.
Because, again, nobody's talked with the Scorpions.
Yeah, nobody could communicate with them for a long time. Yeah.
They're still alive out there, so we can't give you this money. The funniest way to look at it is they kind of make it look like the whole like legal issues that happened real world. They kind of give in universe reason for what happened to the Light Horse using legal issues.
But the first prince of the Federated Sons has confirmed that they're out, that the Goliath Scorpions did in fact absorb the remaining 71st regiment and they were no more. And then even on top of that, were scattered in battles that the Goliath Scorpions went through. So, it was even less likely that they could get anybody from the clan homeworlds. But he basically came and offered them full independence with and then would release all those funds to them just with the request that they serve a 2-year contract, basically, because at this point in the Ill Clan era in 3151, Federated Sons is probably the weakest of the great houses. Pretty close.
Lyran Commonwealth is up there.
That's true.
One has a functioning government.
But the Lyran Commonwealth
general becomes a warlord every 5 minutes.
That's true. It's a neck and neck race, really, between the two. So,
okay.
I mean, Tharkad got invaded. Okay. But at least the invaders left.
For now.
Yeah, true.
We threw our uninvited guests off.
It's true. The Davions did. At the end of the No Greater Honor novel, they basically invite all 5 of the remaining Eridani Light Horse splinter groups together. And Amelia Donovan says, hey, we got to go in together. And there's a little bit of backstabbing and shadiness by one of the splinter groups. It's taken care of relatively quickly. And then they all agree to join together again and head off for the Federated Sons. And so that's where we leave them in the Ill-Clan era. How excited are you for this?
I am pretty excited. I will say my 2 favorite stories towards the end of that anthology were When the Sky Fell, which is them on Hesperus against the J-Falcons.
Yeah.
It's actually not told from the perspective of a soldier in the Light Horse. It's told
it's not.
Like one of the, I think it's one of the Hesperus like security guards, essentially.
Basically, yeah.
And, I mean, I think it has one of my favorite lines in Battletech, which was, I pulled it up actually on my phone, followed their mercenary calling, she whispered, and took their wages and are dead.
Because it's a great line. Yeah.
What happens to the Force. And then, of course, the final one with them being reformed and just kind of seeing all that like come together.
Yeah.
You get a you get a nice full circle with the whole series because you get to see them in various different eras, early succession wars, forced succession war, clan invasion, post serpent, and then jihad. I think there's two in the jihad, actually, if I remember right, two circles. No,
G
it's
maybe
one.
just one jihad, one dark age.
Yeah, it's one post. Yeah, it's one
Yeah.
in the one after they come back, talking about them rebuilding the regiments,
Yeah.
and then yeah, you're right. But yeah, no, it's definitely got some of my favorite BattleTech fiction in there, just because of getting to see
Yeah.
them, getting to see them come back. Because again, I've always loved the regiment. I actually have I painted up a few years ago General Winston and her command lance from her final engagement.
Ooh,
I
nice.
wish I knew where they were, but I remember buying those mechs because that scene in that novel was so like it affected me in a way that I was
Yeah.
like, I have to have that. Like I have to build that force and have it, and was really proud of it at the time. But again, moving from Korea to the States, I don't remember which box it's in.
It's packed somewhere. You'll find it.
I'll eventually.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Thanks for going through the summary of the unit with me here. All right. Well, had a little hiccup, but we're back. Part of why we are doing this, and part of why I started this podcast, is to highlight the storied mercenary units coming out in the Mercenary Kickstarter campaign starting in March of this year, 2023. But along with that, there are also force packs that are already releasing for some of these mercenary units, and thankfully, it's a Barnes and Noble exclusive. But we already have the Eridani Light Horse Hunter Lance. It's kind of hard to see through it, so, but yeah, it's pretty awesome. It has a Cyclops, a Sagittaire, which is a new sculpt. It has a Banshee, and it has a Thunderbolt that has the jump plumes that you can add or remove from the base if you want. So, and the Cyclops is a variant too, actually.
Yeah, it's a variant Cyclops, and then I think it's a reposed Banshee.
It is reposed. So,
They did a bunch of the dynamic poses with the new mechs, which is or the new force packs, which is really nice. And
They did.
get a
They
couple of
did.
new variants, and then you get a repose of at least one, because I got some of the other boxes, and going through those, it's kind of like a kid in a candy store. Even though I already have the
Yeah,
mechs from
absolutely.
previous, I'm like, oh, this is really cool. Like the new Warhammer from the Highlanders one. I just got that actually on
Yeah,
Friday. Yep.
yeah. There's a
Not
better
covered
picture
bases.
on the YouTube than what's just on my camera, but yeah, there's that. And again, this is part of why we're doing it. This force pack, the Eridani Light Horse Hunter Lance, includes a jumping thunderbolt, and what's cool is that they do include certain they do include certain light horse pilots for them, which is pretty awesome. So they also have, obviously, I'll do a better unboxing later, but they have the pilot cards and the office strike cards. So, but yeah, so the Banshee. I'll do this so that we can see it a little better. Banshee. Okay, kind of hard to see there, but meow. Focus. There we go. But yeah, the Banshee. It's a really cool sculpt, actually. I love the new sculpt. Pilot's his name is Greg Oliphant, which is pretty cool. He was a captain, and he, weirdly enough, paints the head of his Banshee like a jester. Straight up craziness. It's kind of cool. But then we have the Thunderbolt. Okay. which is jumping. It's got the plumes of the jump jets there, which is a unique to the Eridani Light Horse configuration. And the pilot that they included was one I didn't know. And I think that they just needed like a lower skilled pilot because it's Lieutenant Yarbrough, who is a former Clan Icehellion warrior. I don't even know, you know, where she is in the fiction, if she actually piloted a jumping one, because in No Greater Honor, there's another pilot that, there's another light horse that actually uses the jumping thunderbolt. It was Brevet Major Ryana Campbell, who was actually a former Northwind Highlander.
And one of the characters in MechWarrior 5.
Yes, which is, she's actually the MechWarrior 5 novel that's in the list is actually about her. So, then we have then we have the Sagittaire, which is Colleen Moran. It's a really good looking sculpt. It's just crazy, all the guns. But she's also a captain. But there's not a whole lot about her other than she is around during the Clan Invasion, unless you know more.
I think most of these names are probably people that were left over from the Clan Invasion Kickstarter that, you know, bought that.
Like, hey, maybe so. So,
they probably, if Colleen Moran like, oh, is a... You are now a Highlander.
That's
now
awesome.
Congratulations, you're part of the Eridani Light Horse.
I wish that I could be that, yeah. Then the last one is the Command Cyclops. Ariana Winston is the pilot that we have for that, and it's pretty awesome. She's actually a 3-2 pilot. So,
which is weird because they have 11A for her, even though she was piloting a dual cockpit Cyclops because she had a communications officer that sat behind her.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's, like I said, that's the force pack for the Eridani Light Horse. Again, you can see the picture if you're looking at the YouTube. If you're listening on to the podcast audio version, then go check it out, or you can check out the socials. But yeah, the Force Pack is out now. It's a Barnes & Noble exclusive, and you can, hopefully you can find it. I've not heard of anyone not finding it, really, if they've gone. So hopefully it stays in stock pretty well, but... well, Derek, again, thank you for joining me. Loved chatting about the Eridani Light Horse. Loved learning about them. And any shout outs or you want to plug on the origin there? Let us know where they can find you.
I could shout out to the podcast I come from. So I would like to shout out Brent, Chandler, and Mario, my co-hosts and fellow degenerates that helped me or help run on the origins of Battle Mech / Armor Up. So if you're interested in learning more about mechs or armored vehicles, soon hopefully proto mechs once they finally get there.
Ooh.
And of course battle armor, we cover that in our two podcasts, which you can find at Armor Up or On the Origin of Battle Mechs. And come join our Discord, come hang out. Each of us has our own channel. We just talk, hang out, and you know, ask any questions you want to know, and there's generally someone that's there that can answer it. And it's a very welcoming community. So
yeah,
everyone's welcome to come hang out.
It's a fun group. You guys are fantastic. I also definitely give a shout out to them because they're fantastic. And again, I'm pretty sure we all met through the Wolfnet Radio podcast, Discord, and community. Again, if you haven't checked them out, go check them out. Wolfnet Radio Podcast. You can also, I'll have a link for both there in there as well. But again, thank you for joining us. Hope that you enjoyed getting to know a little bit more about the Eridani Light Horse, and that you found this interesting. And, you know, if this is encourages you to maybe paint some mechs with their paint scheme, you know, create a unit, play with them on the table. Hope you enjoy it. You can find the Mercenary Star podcast on all of the major podcast audio platforms. And if you would, I would love for you to give us a follow. If you can, check us out on YouTube, give us a subscribe, and let me know in the comments what you thought of this video. Seriously, love to hear the feedback, and want to get better and continue doing this. So we have a good format now, so as long as my computer gets more stable, which it will, then it's going to be a lot easier to move forward. Also, this was a long one because, again, the Light Horse have probably the most history to cover.
I mean, besides the Dragoons, I think them and, what is it, McCameron's Armored Cavalry are some of the most in-depth because they play such a big role throughout the lore.
Yeah, exactly. I think, which is funny because they don't even have as many novels as the Grey Death Legion.
I know.
But, you know, it is what it is. Well, again, Derek, thanks for coming, and look forward to listening to Armored Up and On the Origin of Battlemech. And we'll have you back again sometime, I'm sure. There's a lot of mercenary units out there. So, again, thanks for joining us, and we hope you had a good time, and we'll see you next time.
Have a good one.